Hello and welcome to another episode with Living With Mental Health. It's John again. I'm sorry that this podcast wasn't out last week, but I had a dip in my mental health and I had to take care of myself and get myself back on an even keel, which I'm pleased to know it is going back straight. Although some of the help wasn't quite what I wanted, my partner and close friends have been really supportive, and another service has been really helpful and got me to where I am now. So it's all good. And we are here today with Laura Drysdale, and she is one of the reasons that I can do what I'm doing now with this podcast, because she helped donate some money towards me so that I could get a PC set up, a webcam and a ring light and a microphone so that I could do these podcasts. So, Laura, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, John. Well, it's lovely to be here. And so I'm Laura and I'm the director of the Restoration Trust, and we're a charity and we involve people with heritage and creativity. And we work with people who are living with all different kinds of mental health challenges. We've got projects in different parts of England and in Scotland, but we're based in East Anglia, and that's where most of what we do happens.
That's good. My first question is to you, and all my podcasts so far, they've all been a different answer. They've all been different answers. So I look for, although I forgot to mention it in my last podcast because Johnny said something that really threw me off and I wanted to ask him about that, I'm going to ask you, what does mental health or mental ill health mean to you?
Oh, John, well, I've been thinking about this and I'm going to give this rather odd answer, which I think, I think it's about space. So I think that when you're unwell, you know, me or anyone else, that what that does is it shuts down all your sort of space, like physical space. It's really difficult to get out and about. Kind of inner space, it goes a bit crazy if you're hearing voices or something, or you kind of shut down, you know, you can't think about anything, got no sort of proper space, and it cuts off that space which is the place where you can sort of have relationships with other people, you know, it cuts out other people, space, maybe connecting as well, but I always think of it as about space because it affects your being in the world and your sort of interior thing. So if I was to say that mental wellness is sort of having that inner and outer space and, you know, somewhere to play around in, actually, in your own mind. Some people might call it imagination, but that's what that is, you know, where you can think. Does that make sense to you?
That makes sense to me. And I'm going to pick up, you said the word connection, and this goes back to being involved with the Borough Castle project, because when I got involved, it was at the start of the project in 2018, and I was living out in a little village that didn't have a village shop. We used to have a fan come round as our shop. There was a farmer's shop down the road, but because I don't drive, I don't get it. So I started losing my connection to the community. I started losing my connection. I started to self-isolate. I didn't want to go out anymore. But when I got suggested to going on to this project, I was like, I'll give it a go, see what it's like. And my first session, I come back and I was like, I don't know if it's for me. I don't know if it's for, I don't know. I just felt something didn't feel right with me. But the one plus that I kept coming back to was, everyone was so friendly, not judgmental. And I was speaking to my partner about it, and we both said, you need to go back and give it another go. And I did. And now I'm a part of the furniture. I'm still on the project. So it's connective give me my connect, not my, yeah, my connection back to where I was going down in that deep downward spiral.
Yeah.
I know I was going up because of this project once a fortnight. I was getting out, meeting people, and doing all sorts of stuff. You call it culture therapy. Can you just explain a little bit about culture therapy for us?
I'm very aware I've got these really noisy dogs barking in the background, John. So we've got these two dogs, and they're awfully noisy. I might shut the door. Is that all right?
That's fine.
So just give me a sec. I'll just shut my door, and then I'll keep them out of here. Hang on a sec. I'll be back.
You're on mute, Laura.
So, sorry, John.
That's all right.
So, culture therapy. Well, yeah. I think when you talked there, you were really describing about exactly what I was saying, actually, but in a kind of more relatable way, which is about this gradually your world sort of shutting down. And also you're talking about the impact of this kind of a rural isolation, actually, which is a real thing around where we live in East Anglia, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And how risky it is to be in that position where you lose those kind of vital links that keep us being human, you know, that's really part of being a human being. And it's lovely to hear about how the Borough Castle Almanac project made a difference in your life. And
obviously
you've made a huge difference in the life of the Restoration Trust by being, you know, so much part of it and so generous with your talking about it and sort of sharing the word about it. But so culture therapy is that, really. It's about sort of taking away the barriers that prevent people from doing quite ordinary things, which everybody should be entitled to, like being in lovely places where you live, like exploring interesting things that stimulate your mind.
I think that because you've just recently set up the Heritage Link Worker, and I think that it helps people knowing about their community. And I think if they knew a little bit about their community, they'd be a little bit more passionate about it, if that makes sense.
I really think that's true. Because, you know, there's a lot of problems with kind of bad management of land, especially in towns, and, you know, trashing local environments and stuff. But if people don't feel they've got a stake in it, what's in it for them?
Definitely.
It doesn't really matter, does it? But yeah, no, you're so right. Our Heritage Link Worker, the idea of that, which is a pilot with that we're doing in Great Yarmouth and Waveney, it's all funded by Historic England.
Yeah.
And the idea about that is, with your support, because you're on the steering group for it, is to, just encourage people who are using social prescribing services to see that your local place and all its stories are yours and they're there for you. They can make you feel good.
Definitely. I knew of Borough Castle. I knew it was at the back of the hospital somewhere.
Yeah.
But I'd never actually been there. I'd never actually seen the place. So when I first went, I was quite shocked at how big it was. I didn't realise how big the area was, and I didn't realise it was by a river and all that sort of stuff. But going around there, just taking photos, taking short video clips, that gave me a boost in my mental health.
Yeah. I mean, it's that, you know, I think the way you use Borough Castle for yourself, not quite apart from what you contributed to other people's having a good time and having an interesting time and a reflective time,
yeah,
and also a time where you can talk to people about things that are not great as well. But you used it really intelligently,
yeah,
as a way to, you know, as a tool, actually, didn't you? To,
yeah.
But beautiful rivers, tick the box, you know, lovely open spaces, tick the, yeah, box, beautiful trees. You know, everybody, they're, you know, what's not to like? Do you know what, yes, I mean? The problem is about making sure that people can get access to it.
Yeah, I would have never said nature would have been good for mental health. I would have been a big advocate. Nature won't do anything for it. I would have been in that boat before coming on this project. But seeing how I feel after coming away from a session, I can now be a big advocate that nature does help your mental health. The smells, the noises, the winds, the scenery, other people. And you mentioned about we'll talk. We have sometimes we have some proper random conversations. And then you can guarantee you speak to everybody on that day. You find yourself speaking to someone different through wherever you're walking on the site, and you could be talking about anything, but then you also, it's not clinically. So I think everyone's a little bit more open up to talking about if they're struggling, because they're not in that four white walls, two chairs, a clock on the wall,
yeah,
and watching the time to, oh, it's over. We're in this big open space, and we're just vibing off each other and giving different people's, like, say someone struggled and you say, oh, I struggled, but I done it this way. This might help you. And just sharing experiences. We call it culture therapy, but also it's like self-therapy, because we're sharing each other's experiences and learning from each other, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense, John. I suppose that, yeah, I mean, this project met, what do we meet, 71 times?
Yeah.
And I think that you came to the huge, I'm not sure you didn't attend pretty much like 70 sessions.
No, maybe I missed a couple of them because I was moving houses and stuff, but I'd done probably a good 3/4 of them.
Definitely. And that lasted over, well, 2 and a bit years.
Yeah.
And it's even carrying on now, really.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you think so, but you can't just do these things as a one-off. You know, we think for our purposes, culture therapy experiences have to be at least 10 sessions.
And, yeah, definitely.
And there's a lot of, you know, focus and also have to have these next steps where people, you know, not dropping people at the end of it. There's, you know, there's still, you maintain connections with people, but to have a beautiful project where we were so lucky, actually, with Borough Castle Almanac, and thanks to the Heritage Fund and the Broads Authority and the Norfolk Archaeological Trust and Access Community Trust, just get them all in there, that was such a wonderful thing to have that length of time. And I think that,
yeah,
that is that's about space, John, isn't it? It's back, yeah, to my space thing.
It was good to see all the different organisations working together to put a project together, because I've done CBT and I got nothing from that. I found it hard doing CBT, and that was only for 6 weeks. I personally don't think you can get anything done in 6 weeks. But having that 2-year project, you saw everybody grow in different ways. And like... we all used to laugh at me when we'd go to the Time and Tide Museum and Ian would bring out some arts and crafts because I'd be the first one cursing at him. But I'd get it done and then feel a sense of pride.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so, always really nice to see you kind of because in a big long project like that, you develop kind of like, and it's a world of its own a bit, hasn't it? It's like you know, it's got its own jokes, it's got its own sort of habits. But I think what made that project really nice as well is that it was a very welcoming group, so that some people were there right from the beginning, but other people came along and, you know, started at various other times.
Definitely.
And then maybe started and then went away and came back. And I think it was a generous group. I just think it was a group of good people. That
brings me on to my next point. You spoke about that quite well. We were like one big family with open arms that would welcome new people in. There is, I won't mention names because I haven't asked if I can, so I can't. I know of three people that had 6 months of the project that joined about 6 months from the end of the project. Maybe a little longer than that. But we opened them on well, and two of them are now doing volunteering for one of the organisations that help with the minibus. And one of them's doing our posters, so you can see how it's grown, and it's like the domino effect. It's grown, but we also did a film, and I'm now going to link this into the Dr. Hill's casebook as well.
Oh, okay, great.
We did a film at Borough Castle, the Alma Mac, and I'm going to, when I post a video, I'm going to link it into the description in YouTube, because I think that's worth a watch to actually get a sense of the Borough Castle project. But you also did the Dr. Hill's casebook, which from Borough Castle is a completely different storyline, completely different type of project to what Borough Castle was. So can you explain a little bit about what Dr. Casehill's, Dr. Hill's casebook was, and I'm going to leave the film link in the bio down below, people, so when this is posted you'll be able to click on it and have a look and see what amazing work was done. But could you just explain a little bit about it, please, Laura?
Yeah, John. Well, so we've always had this historic landscapes bit, but we've also always had an interest in archives. And I always think it's worth explaining that there is a weird connection between them, which is that they're both free. Usually you don't have to pay to go into an archive. You know, it's like a library, and you usually don't have to pay to go to be in a beautiful landscape. So that's one reason why they're great places for us to work. And also we've got a fantastic partnership with the wonderful Norfolk Record Office. And so Dr. Hill's casebook is part of this Change Minds programme, where we look at these extraordinary archives from the history of the Norfolk County Asylum, which was the lunatic asylum. You have to use these terms, which now we wouldn't use at all. Which was at just outside Norwich at Thorpe. And we look at the case records of people who were patients in the asylum in the sort of like before 1900. And so all these records have got somebody's name, they've got their photograph, they've got like where they live, how old they are, and then it has something about the story of why they've come into the asylum. Like, you know, it could be they've had, things like postnatal depression, or even psychosis, that sort of thing, things we'd recognise today. And then it has the story about what happened to them in the asylum. And then it quite often has discharged, recovered, with a picture of them as they leave. Often they've put on quite a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Because this was what was called, again, pauper asylum. So it was like, it was like for people who didn't have their own, you know, weren't rich. So what we did was we had a group of people who are all our participants who'd all been referred from the social prescribing services in South Norfolk. And they did research into these records and then worked with a theatre company, the Upshoot Theatre Company, and a fantastic writer called Belle Greenwood, to make a play about the experience of being mad in the 1880s and today, because you know, people live with the same problems, don't they, John? Really? Yeah. And they produce this beautiful play. And because we did all this in COVID, it didn't turn out quite as we expected. So most of the research people did online. We had a few meetings face to face, lovely trip to Gresson Hall and to go and look at the site at Thorpe. But the play was filmed live. So a live performance, but it was filmed. And that's how we showed it to people, was by YouTube performances. Yeah. So it was a beautiful project and it was evaluated, and the evaluation of it was really positive, actually. And now it's part of a whole new project that we're doing, which is where we're running these Change Minds programmes in six places in the UK, including in Norfolk. And in Norwich, we're hoping to do it with the Norwich Prison.
No,
so for the first time ever, we're going to be working with the prison service and working with people in prison. So that's going to be a whole new experience, yeah, really.
You'll get some stories there, I would have thought.
Sure will, John. Absolutely. 80% of the people in Norwich Prison, of the men there, have got a mental health diagnosis.
Bloody hell.
Mm.
I never knew that.
Yeah, it's bad, isn't it?
That's not good, especially, I don't mean this against the prison, but especially if the services are like they are now. I don't know what services are like inside a prison because I've never been, but that's high.
Imagine that. And they do have, we went to the prison to meet them, and they're so keen to do something about the mental health in prison that, you know, there's a governor who's responsible for it. There's a wonderful chaplain that we met, and they've got trust staff in there as well, really nice OT and a clinical psychologist that we met, because they're desperate to try and do something about it. But so many people get sent to prison who really, you know, why are they there?
Yeah.
But when they are there, that's where we can work, I hope. We're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think that'd be a really good idea. I really do think you'll get some extraordinary stories there, past, present, and going into the future stories.
Exactly, yeah. And one of our expert advisors like you, who you know well, is Richard Johnson.
I was then going to come on to him.
Yeah, well, he's doing all the research.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Bless him. He's a busy man. Now, talking of Richard, he got an award. I can't remember what it was. I was meant to pull it up before we started the video, but I forgot to. So can you just explain what the award was? Because I think this is really brilliant and recognises that someone's put a lot of work into the project. So can you just explain a little bit about what it was, please?
Oh, John, it's so nice that you flagged that up. So Richard Johnson, who is part of this sort of Change Minds project, he was a participant himself. Then he worked on Dr. Hill's casebook And now he's part of Scaling Up Change Minds. And he won the 2021 award for Heritage Hero. And he's the Heritage Hero, the National Heritage Hero. And it's awarded by the Heritage Alliance, which is a big body that represents heritage organisations all over Britain. And with Ecclesiastical Insurance, who's a big insurance company.
Right.
And yeah, so that was recognition of, we couldn't even count the number of hours he'd done, John. It was
I was going to say, I can remember meeting Richard when we had our first radio interview at Radio Norfolk for the Borough Castle project. And he had a book like that then. I had to think what size it is now.
Well, he's written, what Richard discovered in doing Change Minds is that he's a very good researcher, like historical, you know, academic yeah. researcher. I mean, he's really highly skilled, and he knows so much about the history of the asylum and what it was like there on a day-to-day basis. And he's shared that knowledge. He's written a fantastic volume about the asylum and about what it was like. He's writing a book about the asylum. He's doing research for people, like, you know, into these case studies. And he's fallen in love with Dr. Hills, who was the medical superintendent of the asylum, who was just like, he was like an out and out good man. That's really what he was, just a really good guy.
That's mad, because when I got a copy of the book that you produced, and seeing some of the procedures he put in then was like some of the procedures that keeps getting talked about aren't still being used enough now, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Go on, John.
That's just, why is it that someone back way then was already thinking of these ideas, but people aren't still using them now? When it's meant to be at the forehand, getting people doing different stuff. And yeah, it just really, that's one of my bugbearers.
Well, you're right to have that bugbear. It's all about resources, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, Dr. Hills had a lot of power. He could control what happened.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, he could just act if he needed to.
Yeah.
But do you know what? I was thinking about you saying about how you describing a room, like where you might go for therapy in a trust. Well, Dr. Hills walked with people. He walked outside. He went for walks with people.
And yeah, I mean, amongst that other in the things. Book.
Well, why? I mean, I'm sure good, really good staff, of which there are lots in the Mental Health Trust, would think to themselves, I can meet somebody and we can walk together. Even in COVID, you know, there were times when we weren't in the worst of the restrictions, when you could meet people.
Yeah.
And why not have a therapy, you know, why not spend the session hanging around outside?
I know some of the secondary services like Mind and Wellbeing are now doing walks.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they're like therapy walks. I think they're just more than walks. So I'm going to bring you up to the last question, Laura. And the question is, what bit of advice would you give to someone who is struggling with their mental health?
I mean, it's like always advising people to do the thing which, when you are really struggling, is the most difficult thing to do, which is to tell somebody else.
Yes.
What do you think?
I agreed with my last guest, Johnny. Reach out. We know it's hard to, but reach out and try and make that first step. There's so many different ways of reaching out. You can write it down. You can draw it. You can sing it. You can rap it. You can do it in poems. If you don't feel like you can speak it, and there's other ways you can, you think you can tell someone you're struggling and then do it. Please don't suffer in silence.
I think you've said it, John.
So, well, I just want to thank you for coming on, Laura. I also want to thank you for the donation you gave me so I'm able to do these. That really means a lot. And I just want to say bye to everyone. There'll be another podcast next week. I'm sending the Zoom link after I finish this meeting. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a good day and enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, John.
Not a problem, Laura.